Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. Julianne Ryan, welcome to the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. I am so happy to have you here to talk about leading with love and your beautiful book called The Learned It in Queen's Communications Playbook, Winning Against Digital Distraction. I think it's amazing and so fun. And but I really want to start with something that we have in common that I didn't realize. So Julianne and I went to graduate school at Teachers College together. We met there over 20 years ago, and we're having like a nice reunion together. But I spent a lot of time in Queens growing up.
And, wonderful.
And you talk a lot about, what are they called? Queenites? Queensites.
I came up with that phrase, Queensites.
Okay. Queensites. I love Queensites. I don't know how to say it, but I love it. So I spent a lot of time in Queens growing up because my grandparents, my Italian grandparents, my mother's parents lived in Jamaica Estates, pretty close to the Trumps. And my grandfather was a plumbing contractor and actually worked with Donald Trump's father. But I was so enthralled with your book when I was reading it, because my whole life, I've always thought of these things as Italian. And now I'm learning today that it's all about being from Queens, which is fascinating. So I would love for you to start with a little bit about your parents' background and Queens, and a little bit about, you know, who you are today, and then we're going to talk about your book.
Yes, I basically lived in all the boroughs except Staten Island, so I wanted maybe sleep over there a couple of nights in an Airbnb just to kind of mark my space. Born in Brooklyn, and my family moved to Queens when I was less than a year old, and I was on the other side of St. John's where you were visiting your grandparents. So in a house that, if anybody's going to Google the old Archie Bunker shows, it was this A-frame houses that were driveway house, classic Queens architecture, where the upside looking back was that you got to know your neighbors and you got to hear everybody's conversations most of the time. Plus they came with something called stoops, which is the Queens expression for our front steps. And that was the gathering place. And the block I grew up on was a dead end. It was the block before St. John's University, which I basically used as my backyard growing up, you know, to walk, pick flowers, just ride my bike, etc. And you asked me about my background. So my mother immigrated to the United States right after World War II. She grew up in Paris and Poland, and her family was from Poland. And then my father is first generation, and his parents both immigrated from Lithuania. I mean, it was under the czar at the time when they were coming over, but they had Polish-Lithuanian backgrounds. So very new to this land. And so were most of my neighbors, because a lot of them were Germans, Italians, Hungarians, Indians. So it was a real melting pot of people, which I took to be quite normal. And then went to school with people from different parts of the world. So it was a really good education, but didn't know that till later in the full extent of how much it taught me.
Well, I love that you're not Italian, and all these things about my family are from Queens. So including like, it takes forever to say goodbye.
See, there's a thing about being from Queens, you become everybody else's nationality a while, because you're like, I had Italian neighbors. We had Mrs. Ruggiero that I used to like just crave her meatballs and sauce because that was coming through the window. We have, so when you are in Queens, you just don't have a craving for the food your mother made. You crave everybody's food because you were always eating. And that's how people exchange love or affection, or they gave you either food or they just taught you how to cook it. So it's a big part. So we all talk with our hands.
We talk with our hands. And I also, we probably ran into each other at St. John's, but we, I grew up in a very rural area in upstate New York. So as soon as we got to Queens, we would run to Union Turnpike and get either bagels or Chinese food, which didn't exist where I grew up.
Okay. I get it. That was the big treat in our house. We cooked all the time, but that was the huge treat. If you got Chinese food once in a while. And then you went to Dante's down the street. There was this old school Italian restaurant there.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, I just so felt connected to you, and I heard my mother's voice and your voice as I was reading your book. So I'm very curious. I've heard the short story of this, but I'd love to hear a little bit about your work currently and how this book came into being, because I think it's a really interesting way to story behind the, before the book.
Okay, so I'll give you two snippets. Years ago, I was doing a lot of HR, human resources work, basically recruiting, employee relations, and training. And I always use stories and vignettes in my interviews and in conversations. And I didn't really fully appreciate it till I got some feedback. I did an amazing thing where, you know, HR people are always doing surveys for everybody else. I gave one for me about where I brought the most value to a situation and where I excel in. And it wasn't about, oh, you found us good people, or you made a nice spreadsheet and gave us statistics about what we were doing. It was about the human connection. And to quote one young lady, she said, you know, you showed up, you made us laugh, you listened, and we were learning while you were doing that. And sometimes that made all the difference. And that just stayed with me, because up to that point, I really thought when I am a fully formed adult, I will just speak in bullet points and PowerPoints and be this very left brain person. And when I got that feedback that people appreciated who I was and what I was doing, that was such a gift, and it just changed. And I started to do more applied storytelling and really study it and start to bring it into groups, into not-for-profit groups and corporations, where it was about doing experiences that would help people listen to each other at its core. That is the true essence of why we tell stories, is for people to connect and listen and appreciate each other's experiences. So fast forward, I was involved in a project and I was doing speeches and talks, and I made a wish. And then I ended up getting my wish of doing a keynote speech. And what happened is it was to a large group of executives for this professional conference company of C-suite people who are going to be the talk about technology and basically sell and buy things that I wanted to complain about what I thought we were getting into trouble with our communications. So the speech started as this very, okay, I'm going to talk to them about connecting with others and using your stories. But a colleague of mine was gracious enough to invite me to breakfast one day to a local diner. And she asked me, what are you thinking about talking about? And I said, well, I'm going to probably be down the hallway somewhere giving a talk about communications. And I know the exercises I'm going to give. And did she say, did nobody explain to you that you're going to be on the big stage first thing in the morning with 500 people looking up at you? So the book came out of my running dialogue with myself. Is what am I going to say to these people? How am I going to connect with them and keep them looking up and laughing for 40 minutes? So that was basically everything I wrote in that book is true, as I've told you. And I started to take a step back and ask myself some key questions, like, how did I learn to talk to people? Because ironically, I was a really, really, really shy kid to the point of mute. I was always very comfortable with my voice sounded, my accent, because I was picking up everybody else's inflections. So how I learned to communicate was doing a lot of listening. And I started out by asking a lot of questions. because I feel like, let me buy some time here. I'll just be a very interested listener and that'll help me connect with people. So fast forward, who knew that would end up being a, you know, something I would apply to my work and connect with everybody.
I wish I was at that conference because I know from the book that it must have been hilarious and enjoyable and fun. And
I animated the burro and made it my sidekick. And I also animated the slides. And I have to give guidance to anybody who ever gets up and does a speech where everybody at that conference could turn around and look at their bullets. All I had was a big picture. So I had to be on point and remember what the heck I was saying next because it wouldn't have made sense. So I really had a great appreciation for comedians. I mean, I've done funny things in stand-up, but the ones who stand up in front of like thousands of people and do a routine. But the good news about that, when I did that thing, I got to be more appreciative of where I came from. And I was like, you know what? We all want to be from New York City, Manhattan. We grew up in Queens, but there were learnings there. And sometimes we have to stay away from a place for a little bit to go back and appreciate it. So it's like the journey home to look at things with fresh eyes and say, you know, I learned some stuff back there.
Yeah. I think you and your book are going to make Queens cooler. I have that same feeling about upstate New York. Every time I go up there, I'm like, I couldn't wait to leave. It's so beautiful up here, you know? It's really nice to have that. But I'm wondering if I give you the plays 1 through 8, you could tell us a little bit about each play.
I have my copy handy. So it's good we're all camera because I just pulled out my cheat sheet.
Of course.
I have to remember. I have to look at this when I'm writing.
Okay. Yeah, I do the same thing with my models. So so before we get into the plays, you know, tell me a little bit about what you hope your readers to get out of this and as they apply the playbook.
I want all of us, not just them, but me too, to remember to pause and listen and pay attention to our inner voices of who's writing the script when we're reacting to somebody else's communication, whether it's in person, in our digital devices, on an email, because a lot of times we're wrong or we've made assumptions that are untrue. And I'm a big advocate of live conversations. Now, COVID changed my whole speech, what I used to make about this, but pick up the phone or do something like this where we're on a podcast, but we're looking at each other right now. And I can pick up cues of your body language and do something amazing. Am I on point? Am I taking you out of context? So it's a great way of building trust. So I'm going to start with the end before we go to the play. And so my expression is to find your front stoop moments, to have conversations that build trust and understanding. Because before you can have a really important conversation, you got to get the little things done and start building trust with somebody.
Yeah.
So and I think that's it's a big preamble.
And, you know, I don't know if it's my age, but I've actually been because I'm on Zoom so much, I've actually been having some old fashioned phone calls with people, which I'm enjoying.
But I'm
getting much better at text. It's so funny. I had a business partner who was much younger than me. And he was like, I finally like copped him. I said, I just don't know how to type on a phone. It takes me forever. He goes, I just thought you were being rude when you sent me 2-word responses.
See, case in point. Like, I text all the time. So and they're wonderful if it's like, cheers, think about you. Oh, you're like, oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
But you do not want to have an emotional heart to heart or critical, you know, important conversation by text. You just miss so much, right?
And sometimes, like, I have a big brother who is a big litmus test of, like, text, you know, like, and how we read into it and, you know, giving instructions or questions. So that was a big inspiration. Plus being married for decades, that was always a longitudinal study. So I've proven my work in real time every day.
No, I love that. What did you say about your Irish husband? He never said a sentence that couldn't be longer or something.
Yes,
like
he
that.
Never met a sentence that couldn't be longer.
Yeah, that's better.
And
that's
it's
better.
True. He has proved that over and over. So again, when you read the book, all my little jokes are real. They've been, didn't have to go to a training academy. They were
well,
real.
You're very funny and it's so enjoyable. And I read a lot of business books and a lot of books on communication. And I have to say it was the most fun read I've ever had on the topic. And so thank you. So play one, keep it authentic.
Yes, that was my prompt. And when you read the book, you'll see a slice of pizza and in it from a genius, talented art person that I use, Chad Spader. Keep Authentic was my call to prompt when I was freaking out, basically, going in front of all these people and saying, like, I'm not a, you know, chief executive officer. I'm not this. I don't have 20 published books in my belt. How am I going to talk to them? And I just, the wise person in front of me, probably the Queen's girl, just said, keep it authentic. Show up as you are. And just relate what the common things that we're all going through, no matter where we live and what we believe in, what we're doing. We're all really bad at communicating and most times. So a few of you out there is probably arguing with me right now and saying, no, I'm not one of those. But the more we say that, usually we are. So I think that was it, to keep it authentic. And to finally, like, I have tempered my Queen's accent on many occasions over the years. And sometimes it raises up its own, you know, it's on certain letter patterns like EA and THs are just my undoing. So show up as you are, I think, is the one thing, and be comfortable. And the more you do that, the more people relax and can do the same for themselves. And I think that's part of the beauty of it.
And there's a fun tutorial on how to speak Queens in Julianne's yes. book as well. Okay, yes. Play number two, when stuck, try something new.
Oh yes, a homage to the 7 train in Queens, where a staff person that worked with me many years ago got so annoyed that about how slow the train was or wasn't moving or coming or all of the above, that she started an organization to advocate for better service. But it was my visual prompt is like, sometimes we get stuck in our dynamics. We're going back and forth in a text and an email. And like you said, sometimes pick up the phone and have a voice, because we have much more ability to understand where that person was coming from. So it's my reminder to do something else, you know, and in this case, sometimes when I was growing up, it was start walking, because none of the transportation you needed was coming. So you better have a good pair of shoes, no fancy shoes way back, you know, just start hoofing it up the avenue.
Well, I also think that sometimes stop communicating is the best thing you can do and take a pause, right? That might be another play.
There somewhere about putting
so
things
what,
in
but
draft.
Play number three is, hey, take a breath. So maybe that's where it is.
Yes, it is. And it's taking a pause and letting things sit. You know, we sometimes are juggling so much. We're having emotional moments, especially in these recent times, and we can react to something that in the light of the day or even with a nap or something and or food, it'll look a little different. So yes, take a step away from the keyboard or the text and put your phone down for 5 seconds.
Sometimes I send too many emails. My colleague who's with us today probably agree. And I just need to stop with the emails.
At what time do you send these?
I'm really pretty good about, we also have like a no email on the weekends. We try to adhere to that. I break every once in a while, but I have a friend that used to send emails at like 4 a.m. So her team would get emails as soon as they woke up. And I said, please don't do that anymore.
Because even when we're inspired and we're just excited about what we want to share, might not be the same reaction on the other side. Especially when their phone is pinging next to them on the bed.
Yeah, I don't do sound on my phone.
So I don't hear texts or emails or anything, but I can certainly take a breath with my emails. Mm-hmm. Play number four is hold on to your inner child.
Yes. All those years of graduate school and the money I paid, and I whittled down transfers to a scene of kids getting into mischief with kids that are not so up to good in the schoolyard. And essentially it's a visual of, we need to pay attention to what is writing the script and telling the story, or the experience we might have had before with somebody. We're having a dynamic with a boss and we're thinking they are not respecting your opinion or not hearing it. Well, it might not be the real-time situation. It might be hearkening back to another situation, another boss, maybe a teacher that spoke to you a certain way. So it's hanging on to that kid who's trying to tell something that will maybe get us in trouble, like being a little angry, a little sarcastic or something like that. So hang on.
I like the saying, if it's hysterical, it's probably historical. Mm-hmm. You're overreacting to something, it probably doesn't have anything.
That is a very good, I'm taking
it. Please take that. It's not mine, but it's an oldie and goodie. Play five, admit it, you get it wrong.
Yes, I think that said it all. I didn't have to dwell on that slide too much when I gave that talk, but it was just calling it out, you know, pick up, you know, like, again, I'm saying pick up the phone, but just say it. Don't brush past it. Just acknowledge it. It can do a huge amount of good for somebody. And also if you're leading a team or leading a group, whether it's your family's your team or whatever, you're showing by example that you have to say you're wrong. It's hard. It rarely happens to me. So I have to like practice. Thank God my husband's not in the same room. You're like, what are you doing? Okay.
Play six. You mentioned this earlier. Find your front stoop. It's so important.
I think, well, when I was working in a legitimate office with doors and stairs and escalators way back then, it would be amazing that simple things made a difference with folks when I was giving coaching advice and working through a lot of employee relations. And a lot of times my expression was visit people in their natural habitat, where they could, if they could attend a meeting or go visit that person in the office rather than going back and forth with emails and this, you know, or setting up time to even see that person the next time where they were in that city. So that made a big difference. And I think it was also finding neutral territory to have a conversation. Go outside, what a concept. Take a walk, go to whatever lunch place you could do and share a coffee and just take yourself out of your work areas. Because everybody had those little cubicles that we could watch the dynamics and listen, and nothing's has great acoustic capabilities anymore. So I think take yourself and make the gesture. And I think it is a sea change. It does make a difference when you do that. And I've seen it for myself, you know, made a big difference when I went to visit people and spend some time with them and just, you know, get to know what was, you know, in their office, even just, you know, explore and learn more about them.
Yeah. And I think in Zoom times, you can also maybe find your stoop by asking people, like I have a new colleague in India. Mm. She often calls me from the playground with her kids and her husband. So okay. you can even find your stoop on and connect personally through Zoom.
It's setting up a habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My favorite, of course, is play seven. You gotta eat.
Yes. Big surprise. Food does a lot. I mean, it's the common language. I mean, everyone has something they love to eat or somebody's cooked for them. And I think that is a great relationship builder. And also it taught me a lot. I've used an analogy of growing up in Queens. I went to school with some Cuban friends whose family had come over during the Castro situation, or the very, very tiny babies when they came over. And I would go visit their families in Jackson Heights. And it was a big deal. My mother was always nervous. Why are you going to these neighbors? What are you going to do? But when I got to the apartment, I found out through translation that the mothers were all worried about the same thing. Are you a good girl? Are you going to study hard? Are you going to go to school? And the mothers would keep feeding me and feeding me. And then after a while, they kept talking to me in Spanish and just feeding me. And the friends would just walk away and gave up because the mother was totally ignoring anything they were saying about, I think she has enough, she's ready to explode. But it was that act of love and appreciation of learning about somebody else's culture and how they live and what they do. And food tells such great stories. I mean, when you exchange a recipe and how you learn to make it, what you did, I think that is such a great icebreaker. And it's one of the things, this is a big, huge hint out there that I'm looking forward to more and more as we go and start to come together. Food, come in person and talk and go to these events that really show different cultures and different levels of understanding.
And there's such a heightened appreciation for all that now. It's really, it's really something. But it reminds me of a time I had the chance to work in Ireland at one point. I was in New York, but we had a hotel in Ireland. And my first trip there, I'll never forget, like we had, you go eat a breakfast and then you have coffee and biscuits. And then we were working, but when we went to lunch, it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours of lunch.
And right now, nothing went fast. It would boggle my mind. And then, oh my God, it was like herding cats when I went to see my husband's family because you needed a cup of tea. And that was another thing. And that took a while. And then if you went to see the relatives, like I had to have the required ham sandwich or the Christmas cake they had been saving for me to show up and the rest. But it was endless food. But it was great because I really did enjoy that. Now, here's something where my long-term memories came. Did you work for the Fitzpatrick Hotel? Is that where you're working?
No, I worked for a company called Medallion Hotels, and we actually built a hotel in Limerick, Ireland, called the Castlereagh Park.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But it's a place that's really evolved. But when I went there originally, I was unique. And I was also, I was also the first non-Irish person in my husband's family. So he spent a lot of time trying to explain how he went to a city with a lot of Irish, to a college that had a lot of Irish Americans, and he found the one woman that didn't have any Irish background. So no, it was very interesting cross-cultural exchange.
Well, my mom and dad are a different generation, but they were both Catholic. And my mother was Italian. My father was from Irish people. And it was a big controversy.
Absolutely.
Marrying an Italian.
Married out of the tribe. Yes.
And the last but not least play is ask one more question.
Ah, yes. Columbo. It is a deal changer. I encourage you or anybody to do this because I've always done a lot of intense listening with people, and it usually is a comment or an acknowledgement of something I heard somebody say in their conversation. And it can be a game changer and open up where you have relationships or connections. I use that analogy of being stuck in traffic on this major highway north of the city, and two of the people had a connection with me. I was stuck with thousands of people. But when we started to talk, I realized one person worked my husband. I mean, how insane is that? And here you look at this city that's got millions and millions of people. So I think that one more question, don't be rude, but of inquiring and being appreciative of somebody's background, like where they grew up, what they're doing, what they're interested in, can yield so much information and trust. And to me, that's my happy place. Some people buy shoes. I ask questions, find out their stories. That's where I'm the happy. Yeah, it's a hell of a lot cheaper. But it always yields a whole benefit. Like, give you a case in point. Next week, I'm still in this little room, but I'm giving talking at a conference that is in the state of Missouri. And the more I've talked about to people, the more I found out they have connections back there, whether they've been to school there or they've worked there or their family came from there, who knew, So we're all connected I think that's the other mission I'm on, to say we are so interconnected in ways that we really should appreciate more. And it's always exciting, and it's a beautiful gift to know that.
So what's in your professional future? What kind of work will you be doing? Do you want to do?
I want to give more talks about communication and building strong relationships and trust. And the type of communication I want to talk about is not like how to write a great advertisement. That's not me. That's not me. And I do want to use more humor. So I think there is more articles coming out, especially about food and relationships. I think my husband will be featured a little bit more, so I move forward about lessons learned about that. So have some fun with that. And travel. I think I would love to get out. There's nothing more exciting to going to a place and really learning about the community when you visit it, and then being able to establish some relationships with folks. So I get excited about that. And seeing young people emerge, like I have a lot of staff and people I've taught and mentored over time, and seeing them grow in their careers is the other thing I get excited about. So those are some of the things that's in my hopper.
And what's your dream place to give a talk and visit around the world? Where would you love to go?
Wow, I do have a bucket list for that. I do want to go back to Spain. I want to go to France. I am really keen to go to Africa, North Africa, as well as different countries in South Africa and around. I have not been to Asia. So I thought there was a chance I could get to Japan this year, but yeah, I do. I don't lack for a list of places to
visit. You're a traveler.
I am a gypsy at heart, in my heart. I'm very stable, same marriage, same people, but the travel part, I do have wanderlust.
So, well, yeah. It might be back to Queens where you met those people from all over the world. How many countries did you say were represented in Queens? Many, many languages. It's
like, yes, there's like 800 and counting. I mean, some insane number that I had to look up 3 million times. Case in point, I remember going to hospital in Queens to visit somebody, and there's not just 3 languages, they have 9-10 languages on the wall of the basic ones, the go-to languages. So it is incredible. And I'm going to share a story, since you have ties to Queens. Yeah. It's something I recently learned. I quote Christopher Walkins as somebody who grew up in Queens, and I found an interview he did with talking about his speaking style and acting style. And the way he explained it is he didn't learn that as a method acting type. He learned the way he speaks in his movies because he grew up with so many immigrants. He said everyone's language was English as second language. And when you have to translate what your thinking or your emotional level is, you have to think and create pictures. So it made for that very halting cadence in his language. And after all these years, I felt like someone had handed me the Rosetta Stone. I was like, yes, now I understand why we talk a certain way when we grew up as first generation. And that little bit of difference stays with us. But I love it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And how do our listeners find out more about you and more about your book?
I have a website, jryanpartners.com. Very sedate, very calm. And then LinkedIn, of course. So I'm out there. And then if you Google that book title, you don't even have to put the whole thing in because it's exhausting. I will write a book.
Did you write The Learned It in Queens?
Yes.
Probably
yes.
Comes up.
And it comes up, trust me, because there have been, you did a very good job, but there are a lot of podcast hosts. They almost have to train to be deep, you know, deep pearl divers, because it's like takes more than one breath to get that whole title out there. But the person who worked me as an editor said I needed a tagline, so I did listen to him. Yes.
Well, Julianne, it's been fun to have a reunion with you. It's been fun to travel in my mind to Queens. And thank you so much for being here and for the beautiful work you are putting in the world. We are so happy that you came. And
it's a pleasure.
I'm excited to see future articles and books. And my suggestion would be that you create some videos, because you're so fabulous on video. So
thanks. And actually, that was a conversation I had earlier today. But here's the shout out. if you decide to bring your roadshow to Queens or to even close to Queens, I will meet you and we're going to go find and explore and have a good meal and go through our old stomping grounds. And I think that'll be a fun.
We will do that. And I really appreciated the map of Queens because I was like, oh, because I remember driving around Queens, like mainly to get the right food, right? The right lemon ice, the right cannoli, the right pasta, the right buffalo mozzarella. It would take all day. And now I know why.
And people come back from all over. My friend lives in Pittsburgh. And, she, you know, when her son comes, God forbid, she doesn't go to the right bakery that's still in business and bring back the good stuff. You know, it's just insane. Listen, good. You got to eat.
You got to eat. And then we'll do an eating communication tour in Queens. I look forward to that. And
maybe
we'll film it. That would be fun. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you. Cheers. Have your best day. Be safe and be well. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.